The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook if you sign up for a two-week trial of their service. Audible has 40,000 titles available to download. For all the details, follow the links at guardian.co.uk/audible.
The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Jemima Kish.
And I'm Charles Arthur, and this is Tech Weekly in Dublin.
So we've abandoned King's Cross, and we're in the heart of Dublin on the River Liffey. The view from this hotel balcony tells the story. To the left, we've got the industrial lands of Dublin's docks. To the right, it's a forest of steel and glass and new buildings, and plenty of abandoned building sites which testify to Ireland's property crisis.
Ireland, and Dublin particularly, is a European hub for technology. Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Dell, Hewlett-Packard and Intel all have bases here because of the favourable, or what used to be favourable, economic conditions.
And we are 22 minutes closer to the US by air than the UK.
That's all resulted in a hotbed of tech talent in the area of startups that we're here to check out.
Later on, we'll be climbing the stairs to the attics of Dublin's Georgian terraced houses, ferreting around in some of the city's most interesting web businesses. CloudSplit CEO Joe Drumgool will be telling us how Ireland needs a recovery room to learn from the startups that don't quite make it. He says success is built on a pyramid of failure.
Being bankrupt in Ireland is like the end of the world. You're dead. It's incumbent on the government to do something about recovering those entrepreneurs. And I think the idea of an entrepreneurial recovery room that gives you some support and essentially gets you back on your feet, if you had that support, you would salvage more and more of our entrepreneurs, because the failed entrepreneur knows more about what to do right next time than anybody else I know.
And Jolt's Dylan Collins explains how he's become a mentor to local developers.
You know, a lot of the folks here do that. We're a pretty open community in terms of trying to help people get out onto the international market and kind of progress and do their thing.
We've arrived here as the Irish government has been forced to nationalise the two major banks, the International Monetary Fund has been called in to get the government to reorganise its finances, and Ireland is officially now the most debt-burdened country in the developed world.
But does that have any impact on the tech scene? Will a tough financial future cripple startups? And will developers now emigrate to escape the pain? Will the international companies, attracted here by the low corporation tax, start to pack up and leave? Much of the area's modernisation has been a result of tech investment, so what happens now? That's what we're about to find out now, as we're off to meet the top tech talent. Tech Weekly visits Dublin. Charles and I got off a plane and jumped in a cab across Dublin as the government was under fire for its mishandling of the economy. We got to the city centre and started checking out the local startup community, meeting Niall Harbison of Dublin social media startup Simply Zesty and Ray Walsh of Enterprise Ireland, the government organisation tasked with growing Irish business. Enterprise Ireland have been instrumental in funding and developing many of Ireland's startups through initiatives like their iGAP seminars, that's Internet Growth Acceleration Programme, with experienced entrepreneurs to develop startups. But our first question was for Niall, who's been a beneficiary of Enterprise Ireland's assistance, so we began by asking how they'd be able to help him.
Primarily for a startup, you're looking for money if you're, you know, let's not beat around the bush, but you kind of stumble into all these other mechanisms that they provide, and it is absolutely unique. From talking to entrepreneurs around the world, I don't think there's that level of support, and I think it really is to be admired. Starting a business here is obviously tough at the moment, but it's also, you know, some of the biggest companies have been started in recession, so I think it's, if there's one sector that's positive at the moment, it's the tech sector, and I think that's what's been seen.
But I mean, outside here, the Sky News and the BBC News trucks are all standing in Merrion Street. They're all waiting for the IMF people to come out. The banks are being nationalised left, right, and centre. There's a toxic bank with mortgages that simply can't be honoured. Ray, can Enterprise Ireland really continue putting money in when the government is not just broke but beyond broke?
all of our startups, and Enterprise Ireland is only focused on startups who have that export piece. We're never going to grow large companies here. It all is about exports, and that's our metrics, export-driven companies.
You say it's about exports, but also you have these very attractive corporation tax laws that have attracted a very impressive roster of multinational companies. But there is this perceived problem, and all of the startups that we've spoken to about this have said that they don't think it is ethical to allow what's known as the double Irish manoeuvre, where people can siphon out the taxable profits from Ireland. And Google has effectively paid 2.6% corporation tax instead of, say, 30% in the US. I appreciate the benefits of Google being in Ireland, which is fantastic on a number of levels, but do you think this is a loophole that needs to be shut?
Corporation tax is very, very important to the Irish state and to the establishment of FDI investment into Ireland. It's not the only reason why multinationals set up here, and we are getting more competitive because of the recession, and that will bring in more FDI investment.
Niall, you're in a pretty impressive office. It's got what used to be a squash court in the back. It's a place where bankers used to come when they'd had their day. Why are you able to be in offices like that? Is it because Simply Zesty is rolling in money?
No, I think it's a combination of factors. I think our industry is on the up and theirs is very much on the down. So I think it's
cheap
a cycle.
Rents? Is it
yeah,
cheap rent?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, for us to be able to afford offices in the centre of Dublin would have been impossible during normal times. But look, you have to capitalise on the opportunity that's there.
How far have the rents fallen?
You could actually get somewhere for free nearly if you were on the very outskirts of the city and you're willing to push it.
How does that compare with a couple of years ago?
Oh, I mean, we started our business out of our bedroom because rents were exorbitant, and that's you had to do what you had to do at the time.
No, we've been trying to get a sense of just how much these multinationals are involved in the local development scene. We were wondering about the brass plaque phenomenon, where you know the company might appear to be registered here, but you know, is it just an empty box? How many people are really engaged in the local development scene? What's been your experience of the contribution of those multinationals?
It's great that you have them here. And the things that you hear over and over and again is, like, even if they don't have massive amounts of development or innovation here, they've still maybe got 2,000-3,000 staff that spill down into the economy. But you also have to look at, you know, the government themselves are saying that there's 40,000 people emigrating this year. Now, you'd probably think that those are 40,000 people who could possibly be starting businesses or so. My problem is not with the corporation tax. I think that's for much smarter people than me to sort of debate. My problem would be with the mentality that Google and Facebook have here. So what annoys me is simple little things like Facebook Places, widely available in the UK, all over the world, can't get it on my phone here. It's, to me, it feels like the companies themselves, Google and Facebook, need to really sort of ramp up the way that they engage with the local community, because it feels like they're in an ivory tower to a certain extent. I mean, I don't know one person in Google, and we're a technology company. So I don't know, I think the companies should be doing a little bit more to embrace the local community.
Ray, is it right that the fairly limited pool of talent, you've got some really good talent in Dublin, but it's a relatively small place. Is it right that these multinationals can come in and offer amazing salaries and amazing benefits that local startups can't compete with? Shouldn't those developers be in local businesses and local startups?
The experience they get by working in Google or working in Facebook or other companies like that, and then reaching a certain level and then feeding into the indigenous companies, is really, really valuable. Can those indigenous companies pay the same monies? No, they can't. But the ability for that talent to be transferred from either to Google or to Facebook local, and that's what we've seen. Actually, a number of the management team in Google are Irish, and they're trying to basically open up to the Irish indigenous companies, and the same in Facebook.
Niall, why do you think those 40,000 skilled people are emigrating then?
Because it's easier to emigrate and get a job than pay for other people's mistakes, I guess. There's little hope for them at the moment, but if there's one sector that gives us hope and can change things, it's the tech sector. Because realistically, there's, you know, the rest of the economy is in big, big trouble. But as you've probably seen from talking to startups here, I don't think most of them are exporting, or 90% of their businesses around the world. So hopefully that's a help.
So what do you think is the one thing that this incredibly embattled government could do which would really make the tech sector take off here?
First of all, resign, but that's...
I think they're going to do that anyway, actually.
the corporation tax is one thing that people focus in on, but really it's not that relevant to startups. I think the work that Enterprise Ireland do is second to none here in supporting startups. I mean, you just have to look at the IGAP program here. That's not available to other companies around the world. So funds are going to be tight. If anything, it's the one area of the budget where hopefully they'll keep, you know, if not keep the same amount of money, certainly increase it and just keep on supporting startups, I think.
It's interesting as well to look at the numbers of people around the world that claim Irish descendancy. It's something like 70 million, and the population here is 4 million. But it does open doors for people, not least in Silicon Valley. I don't think you can say that if you're English. Thank you very much to Ray and to Niall.
We're in the throng of it now. We're surrounded by lots of entrepreneurs and developers, some of Dublin's finest, and we're going to ask them for a Twitter-length pitch to explain what they're working on.
Hi, my name is Shuan Nirali. I'm the CEO of TunePresto. TunePresto is software that enables anybody, regardless of musical ability, to create music to match their video. It does it automatically. It looks at the composition of your picture in terms of color saturation. You pick a style of music, and hey presto, TunePresto creates a piece of music.
Hi, my name is Steve Collins. I'm CTO of Swerve.com, and we're developing a new platform for social game developers. We're hoping to make it really easy for game developers to create games as services, sort of react to user feedback, react to how people are playing their games, and essentially optimize the game as a result.
Hi, my name is Tony Burke. I'm CEO of Actis Marketing Solutions. We provide mobile marketing solutions to retailers, shopping centres, and other retail outlets such as airports, etc., including indoor navigation of malls and directional search technology. We have a combination that is unmatched in the market at the moment.
We're in a very lively cafe, as you can probably hear, at the Science Gallery, which is in Trinity College, part of Trinity College in Dublin. We're with Joe Drumgoole, who's the CEO of CloudSplit. Give us the pitch.
CloudSplit is real-time analytics for your application. We're building stuff in the cloud all the time now, and we see three strains to the cloud. Software as a service, which is Salesforce. We're nothing to do with those guys. Platform as a service, which is Google App Engine and Microsoft Azure. We don't do anything there at all either. And then is infrastructure as a service. That's us. So the people who use Rackspace and Amazon Web Services are starting to move from a CapEx to an OpEx model. So instead of spending big at the front, they spend as they use the services. Of course, as you move to spending as you use a service, you start to see these variable costs entering your business. Everybody hates variable costs because you can't tell what you're going to be spending in the future. We give you a dashboard and a control panel that gives you insight and understanding of those variable costs in a graphical form. I could show you your Amazon bill today, and it would just be a big, long table of gobbledygook. You put it into CloudSplit, you get a lovely graph. You get real-time understanding of your spending. If you upgrade to our paying model, you get to hook into the API and get it as it happens, and then we'll add alerting and ability to control and understand your spend going forward. Think of it as cost control for your cloud spending.
It's Google Analytics for the back end, is how you
describe it. That's exactly what it is. Analytics for Google Analytics gives you real insight into what's happening on your web page. We give you real-time analytics into what's happening on your database, on your storage, and on your compute.
And it's 100% based on Amazon at the moment. You've told me that you've now got a sort of three-phase plan for how you'll be rolling out the product, but you kind of admitted that when you started and you rolled out the first version last year, it was, in your own words, it was dreadful. It was
like using
a steam engine.
Sucked something rotten. We basically.
So what did you learn there?
Well, we made it. It's too hard to use. I mean, we made the classic engineering mistake of building something that was incredibly complicated and wonderful to our own eyes. Unfortunately, our customers didn't like it as much as we did. So what we've done is simplify, remove capabilities that we didn't think people wanted, added in a much simpler way of getting your bill into the system and gone back to basics. So essentially, all you need to do to get access to the system now is upload your bill. And once you've uploaded it, we'll give you the analytics. We'll do the other stuff later, but we just learned from our mistakes, which is people can't afford to spend a lot of time investing in a free product like ours if they don't get instant payoff and instant gratification. So we're the instant gratification guys now.
You have a good relationship with Amazon, but just like somebody that gets all of their income from app development through Apple, for example, isn't there a certain vulnerability in having a business entirely based around one mothership?
There is, but you have to make your choices, and these are all the risks that we take on board when we go into the entrepreneurial world. You've got to make some bets. We think Amazon isn't going to do anything in this space in the near term. We had the same problem with my last business, PutPlace. Everybody said, won't Google get into online backup? Well, it's, you know, 5 years later, Google still doesn't do online backup. So I think we grant too much credence to the fears of the future. I think it's really important to focus on doing a great job for your own business and not sweat too much about what the big guys are going to do.
During the downturn in 2008, you had to make 8 engineers redundant from PutPlace. But that was in November, and you said by Christmas they'd all found jobs again. So what does that say about the state of recruitment in Dublin's tech market?
The tech sector is kind of recession-proof, and I'm sure somebody out there is going to say, I don't have a job, but certainly I haven't met anybody in the tech sector that wants a job that doesn't have one. It's full employment. I, as far as I can see, most of the big companies who are growing have lots of open recs and are struggling to fill them, particularly as engineers. I mean, historically, Ireland has been a country of engineers, and we've lacked skills in business development, marketing, and sales. I think we've kind of solved the problem in business marketing, sales, and development in no small part to the efforts of Enterprise Ireland in focusing on those areas. But the boom economy of property has meant that a lot of people who would have historically gone into maths and science degrees have done arts degrees or have done medical degrees or have done something that isn't engineering based. Now that's changing. 2 years ago was the first big uptick in science applications, and I think we are going to essentially move back to being a country that produces great engineers on tap. I just hope we'll have jobs for them by the time they come out of college.
So tell us about your recovery room idea, if you were in charge.
If I was in charge, it wouldn't be pretty. I've talked about this a couple of times in the last few months. One of the things that struck me when I was looking at a large number of failures in the software sector in the last few years is, first of all, being bankrupt in Ireland is like the end of the world. You're dead. I mean, there are all kinds of bad things that happen to you when you go bankrupt in Ireland that aren't the case in the UK or in the US. And that's a problem I can't fix, right? And I think the government needs to step in and do something about the bankruptcy laws in Ireland. But it's not so much being bankrupt. Lots of businesses go out of business without really being bankrupt, but it's such a depressing moment when your business closes down, when your business collapses, and I think it's incumbent on the government to do something about recovering those entrepreneurs. And I think the idea of an entrepreneurial recovery room supported by the government that gives you a place to go, that gives you some support and essentially gets you back on your feet, either helps you to find another job or better still gets you back into the startup arena as quickly as possible. I mean, a lot of the time you've got to get back on that horse. I mean, when PutPlace went down, I had started CloudSplit, you know, within 12 months later. And I think that's a really, you know, I think if you had that support, you would salvage more of our entrepreneurs. I mean, I know a number of people who have just said, I've had enough after their first one blows up. And I think Enterprise Ireland does a huge amount in supporting the VC community. It does a huge amount in supporting the startup community. I think there's an opportunity here for Enterprise Ireland to support that most critical resource, the failed entrepreneur, because the failed entrepreneur knows more about what to do right next time than anybody else I know.
I'm Philip Marr from Groupie.com. Groupie.com sells one discounted electronic steel, cheapest anywhere on the internet, shipping anywhere in Europe.
I'm Alan Coleman. I'm the CEO of Brightbill Limited. We develop solutions that are like Mint.com for utility bills, but we also provide the underpinning platform like Yodlee, and we sell that solution to banks, postal providers, utilities, and telcos.
Hi, I'm Conor O'Neill, and I'm CEO of Louder Voice Customer Reviews. You're selling anything, you're selling a product, you're selling a service, you're a hotel, whatever. We enable you to get your customers reviewing on your site, driving business on your site.
So I'm here with Rob Martin, who's Chief Executive of Infacta. Rob, you're developing a new product called Mixamo. Explain for us what that will do.
It's a group communication platform. Allows people to send out messages to their customers in whatever format the customer wants to receive it, whether it's going to be SMS, email, or through their social networks or instant messaging. Our core focus, our core market we're after would be small businesses.
Now, you're based out in Sligo, which is some distance away from Dublin, and one of the things that you've observed is that Ireland has been comparatively slow to pick up on the internet, that a lot of places haven't had broadband until quite recently. What sort of effect do you think that has had on how the country views technology and how it uses it?
Yeah, I guess we've been around a while. We're a bit unusual. We started out in 2001 selling software directly on the internet. We were always an internet-only based company. We found that back then 80% of our market was in the US, but slowly over time it's spread out to, we've a far more bigger customer base now in Europe. Where we're based in Sligo, we didn't have access to broadband until about 5 or 6 years ago, and therefore for people to actually access web apps and software from the internet, it was really slow to actually, download and actually get involved in using apps on the internet. But it has changed a lot recently. More and more people are using the internet now over the last couple of years. More and more people are willing to actually buy online, buy not only software, but all sorts. So it's changing. But yeah, it was a slow, we found ourselves for our software, it was a very slow take-up within Ireland. And even today, less than 1% of our sales are in Ireland.
You've also found that it's quite difficult to recruit developers and designers who have the sort of entrepreneurial spirit that you're looking for. Is that because they're not coming out of the university at all, or is it because they're going off abroad? What's the problem there, do you think?
There are people coming out of the university with certain skills that we're looking for. However, I'm not sure there's enough. I think there needs to be more. We've been quite lucky in that we've grown organically, we're self-funded, and we've been able to add to team over time and being able to pick out one or two when we need. If we were to scale quickly, I think it would be a big issue for us. And in particular, I think in Ireland, this is my own personal opinion, there is a serious lack of top-class designers, top-class design talent. You can access it abroad now, it's no problem to access the designer and contract it in. But again, if we wanted to bring it in-house, it would be a quite difficult thing to find these people.
Rob Martin, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm with Dylan Collins, who's CEO of Jolt and also has his finger in a pie called groupie.com, which is sort of group buying for geeks, which sounds very interesting. So you've been involved in loads and loads of projects, and Demonware was one of them. Remind us about that.
That's right. Well, we started Demonware in 2003. In a tiny little office above a tattoo parlor in the middle of Dublin. And we saw that online gaming was becoming a bigger and bigger thing in and on consoles, Xbox and PlayStation. So we decided to start building technology to allow game developers to have more online interactivity in their games. Over 3 or 4 years, we became the number one company in that space. So our technology was used in literally the biggest console games in the world, stuff like Guitar Hero, Call of Duty, Splinter Cell, Rainbow Six, and it was eventually acquired by Activision in 2007.
So listeners, you will have used Demonware, whether you know it or not. You think that Ireland isn't good enough and Dublin isn't good enough at bigging up its online game sector. So tell us what we should know.
Yes. Dublin in Ireland is one of the biggest online gaming hubs in the world, and not enough people know that. We have most of the biggest names in online gaming who have a location here in terms of either development or support for their European activities. We have companies like Zynga, Blizzard, Activision, GameStop, CrowdStar. I could go on. And when you look around and you see the other hubs in the world like Montreal, Vancouver, LA, San Francisco, people aren't talking about Dublin in the same breath. And I really think they should be, because we do have, I think, per capita, probably the biggest number of games companies here than anywhere else.
You've sold Jolt now. Tell us about that deal and how it came about.
Well, we set up Jolt to be an online gaming publisher and developer. So we were making games that people could play from an internet browser or from Facebook, and we started that about 2 or 3 years ago. We were talking to various people about raising capital at the time in late 2009, and GameStop started talking to us. And GameStop are the biggest video games retailer in the world, so it was quite, we were a little bit baffled when the conversation started. But we realized that their reach around the world, because they've got about 6,500 stores and hundreds of millions of customers who walk in and buy things from them every year, that we could actually create something huge with them. So when we started testing the ability to move customers into online games from a physical store, we realized we had something very, very special on our hands. So the deal was announced in late 2009, and we're now part of the GameStop network.
The success that you've had with Jolt and Demonware, and I'm sure the success you'll have with Groupie as well, means that you're now able to offer mentoring to entrepreneurs in Dublin. Is that a very formal arrangement? How does it work?
No, generally people either call me up or they send me an email or they get in touch with someone who knows me. Usually if it's in the area of consumer internet or online gaming, I'll be able to advise them or open a few doors. And, you know, a lot of the folks here do that. We're a pretty open community in terms of trying to help people get out onto the international market and kind of progress and do their thing. So I'm always open to having conversations or coffee with people or lunch or anything like that.
And there's a new Jolt game on the way.
That's right. Playboy Party is going to be launched on Facebook in a couple of weeks. It's the game that everyone who's male and under the age of 50 has been waiting for.
It's got viral written all over it.
It really does. It's our Christmas present to the world.
Joe, thank you very much. Sorry. Dylan, thank you very much.
I've been called much worse.
Hi, I'm Sasha Wilson from Plenty.com. We do receipt management and expense tracking for self-employed, small businesses, and traveling salespeople. We process our receipts with people power, not computer power. Everything is done accurately by a person, no matter what currency, no matter what language, no matter where you are.
I'm Owen McCabe from Contrast. We design and develop web applications for our clients. We have a product as well, our first product called Exceptional. And Exceptional monitors errors in our customers' web apps. So anytime something goes wrong, it sends our customers' developers all the information they need to fix it.
I'm Pat Phelan of Maxroam. We save you money when you're traveling. Put our SIM card into your phone and connect anywhere in the world at 50% of what you pay normally.
There's a plane with a shamrock on it sitting on the runway, and we're about to get on it. It's an absolutely glorious day in Dublin. We're looking out over the Dublin mountains. But we're about to go back to London. We have to say a very big thank you to all the entrepreneurs that turned out and took the time to share their ideas with us. It's a very, very exciting scene. We want to say a very big thank you to Enterprise Ireland for looking after us so well and giving us such a good insight into what's going on over here, and for making us quite jealous that we don't have an equivalent agency being quite as active in the UK, dare we say.
Jemima, what do you think we've learned from the last few days?
It's a small but very well-supported scene in Dublin. There's some very well-defined, well-thought-out propositions that are extremely niche. And they're very lucky that they perhaps have a slightly easier route to support and mentoring on the West Coast because of America's affection for Ireland.
I think the thing that I learned from it is that there are some really interesting companies, but also that all the stuff you read in the papers about the collapse of the banks and the economy and the budget and the infighting politically has absolutely no effect on these companies because they don't rely on bank money, they don't rely on property, and actually the property price fall is fantastic for them because it means they can get free offices. So they're laughing.
I'd question the role of the multinationals over here who had a very low presence at our turnout, and I think they're all quite concerned about the appearance of the corporation tax issue, and they're all aware that people know that they're over here because of the tax breaks, but they don't want to publicise that. But it's a shame. I think if they're over here and they're being active, they have an obligation to be an active contributor to that community, and they need to be out there supporting startups, supporting developers, and also taking the lead in training and organising meetups, which I think we found a lack of. We're off back to London. Normal service will be resumed next week with Alex Charles and myself in the studio. But until then, thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. Head to guardian.co.uk/audible.